But Pete, is it your birthday?
Yesterday. I got a hug today from Chef Morimoto, so today is officially now my real birthday.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Hello and welcome to the Park Stop Podcast, episode 19. My name is Alicia Stella. With me is always my co-host, Ian.
Hey, kids.
And joining us today for the first time is our very special guest, Peter Tudone of the Disney Magic Hour podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. How are you guys doing?
Good. Nice to talk to you again, Pete. What's up?
Yeah, it's good that we haven't been talking for the last 25 minutes.
If only we'd been rolling. Always be rolling. Today we're going to be talking about the grand opening of Star Wars Rise of the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
That I did not get to go to.
Which, Ian, yeah, you didn't go on that, right, Ian? Just want to make sure.
No, I get to be the guy that gets to annoy the crap out of you too with questions.
And as we mentioned recently, our show is brought to you in part by our travel partner, Elizabeth, at Destinations in Florida. She can help you plan your next Orlando vacation with the best deals on ticket packages and on-site hotels. And Park Stop listeners get a $25 gift card when they book through our link. Find the special link in the show notes to request your free vacation quote. There's too many words. It's just too many words.
Can I have a gift card?
Go to OrlandoParkStop.com/travel. You have to breathe in the middle there.
All right. So ride. I need to know about this ride. You guys have both been on it. I need to know.
First off, I'm going to say we're going to try to avoid anything that could be spoilery until we actually get to talking about the ride experience, because I do want to start by talking a little bit about because I was there opening day. Pete, when did you go?
I was there opening day, and I was actually there yesterday, which would have been the 7th, which is Saturday. So I was there Thursday, then Saturday, and I plan to be there again Wednesday.
So I figure we could talk a little bit about that. And then as we approach the gate, so to speak, then we'll get into the spoilers of what's inside. But I will say it was freaking amazing.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, it's, you know what's crazy? And we'll get into it more when we get into like the minutiae of the ride. But I think it really offers up a nice balance to what Smuggler's Run is now, because one of the things that you got to really know about this ride going in is that you are purely a participant. You know, you don't really have an effect on what's happening. It's all happening to you and around you. So that now paired up with the very, like, you are in control of things, you know, take on Smuggler's Run, they really work well with each other.
Yeah.
And you wish that they would have opened the land with this, but all right, you know, I know we lost the restaurant, we lost the sea attraction that they didn't, you know, announce, but the restaurant they did announce, that's the one that's a little more weird. But who knows, they could do that in the future. But now when you go in there,
ticket and not ocean for the sea attraction.
Yes.
For our listeners out there, we're not talking about the sea attraction. We're talking about
No.
The Bantha ride.
Everything water will be handled by James Cameron, I'm sure, with the Avatar add-ons. Trust me. That land has really shaped up in a short amount of time just by opening the gates on this attraction.
Yeah, definitely agree. It's funny because every time I would walk through the Resistance base area before this ride opened, it'd just be like Chewie and Rey with a wrench working on things. And it turns out they were just working on getting the ride open.
Yeah, that's a pure role playing going on in there. But yeah, now that it's open, we're gonna have a lot to talk about. But man, it really gives a very roundabout feel to that whole land.
Yeah, it actually fixes the music problem for me, because coming out of the land where there is no music or very minimal music or realistic music playing on a radio like Pandora type of thing, going mm-hmm. into the attraction and having the music swell like you're on an adventure is such a like contrast to the land that I actually now I no longer complain that the land doesn't have music. It fixed it. It fixed the problem for me, because it the contrast is actually kind of powerful. So, okay. What time did you get there on opening day, Thursday, December 5th?
I arrived at the park at 5:30 and was very surprised to find that not only did I mean, you knew this because I believe you were already there, but I parked. And then when I got to the front gate, there was no one there. They were already all in.
Oh, yeah. I was on Tower of Terror by then. You kidding?
Yeah. So I walked right in and I immediately loaded up the app and I booked my boarding party of one.
So when did you find out that they were going to use virtual queuing for this attraction on day one?
The Twitter, Disney's Twitter actually put it out the night before. Yeah. And when I woke up at 4 a.m, that alert was still on my phone. And I was like, oh, good. This is exactly what I wish they would do for a lot more stuff.
No, I got there at, because I saw, okay, instead of sleeping, I just laid there and pretended to sleep and looked on my phone. and I saw multiple people saying the cast members in the parking lot are telling us they're going to open at 4. They're going to open the parking lot at 4. And I'm thinking, okay, park opens at 8. I'll get there at 4. And then, you know, I'll play on my phone. I bring some phone chargers and I'll keep myself busy for 4 hours. Maybe they'll let us in an hour early like they did last time. No big deal. I get there at 4. I see on Twitter that people that got there at 3:59 were U-turned around and had to go. And like, no, we're not letting anyone in. But I got there like 4:05 and they were letting people line up at the parking booths. And then we just waited till 4:30. They finally let us go through the parking booths. So I guess they're waiting to staff them. So like 5 minutes earlier, I would have been at the back of the line. So that's crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing that I noticed in the first two days that I've gone, there seems to be an extra 30 minutes means a lot. You know, and even an extra 5-10 minutes can mean a lot towards you avoiding a line or even just getting, you know, your pass. So I know it's not fun to do. And look, it's an attraction. You know, this is a theme park attraction. If you're not comfortable waking up that early in the morning, don't. It's okay. You'll get on it eventually. Like, it's not going anywhere.
it can only get better from here.
Yeah, like, it's only going to get better. Remember, every big ride that opens – doesn't work 100% when it launches. This is just the way things go now. If you want to go on opening day, you are agreeing that your high heels may fall into the, you know, the walkway that isn't yet held and there's only water in the bathrooms, but there's no water to drink. Like, this is the same thing that happened when Disneyland opened, but it's a lot better. Like, so if they got through it, we can get through it.
Well, you got to expect anything like that that's new. And this ride's pretty new in a lot of ways. So anything brand new is going to be like that.
Yeah, especially these days, at least when Millennium Falcon has a problem, they can turn like they have. Oh, we can just turn off this turntable. We turn off this one pod. They can usually still have half capacity or even just like 95% capacity if there's an issue. This one's a little more noticeable. Hagrid's incredibly noticeable. There's only one track.
Yeah.
So I got in, I think just before 5:30, they let us in. And I'm with two other people I met up with when I got there. Gary and Kenneth, thank you. I had an amazing time. Thank you for letting me join you and skip ahead 4 people. And as soon as we get in, they book their boarding passes and get like boarding group. I can't remember. I think it was like 15. And then I get boarding group 18 because the app wasn't recognizing that I had swiped into the park. And it was like, no, you must be in the park. And I'm like, I am in the park. They're like, no, you must be in the park. And I have rebooted it. And because of that, like 30 seconds of rebooting the app, I got 3 boarding passes later than the group I was at who just did it. We all entered exactly the same time. So that's crazy how 30 seconds made the difference.
Yeah, we actually had a similar situation on Wednesday. We thought that we were all on each other's app. And it turns out one of our friends, it's more that their wife created them as a guest. He doesn't actually have his own login and the wife wasn't there. So because she's actually a cast member, she was working that day at Smugglers. And so I went to go make it. It wouldn't let me. I had to delete him, then go through. We got group 22. He immediately jumped on his phone, did it himself. He got group 24. But it was, I mean, seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, 30 seconds to a minute after I put mine through. And then you start looking behind you and you're like, wow, how many people are in a group?
Yeah. No, obviously like, not that many.
Yeah, not that many. Was it 50 maybe?
Yeah, I think 50 seems to be the guess. And let's get into that a little bit because I don't want to go too crazy into the virtual queue because by the time this actually comes out, who knows how it's running? But this might not come out till Thursday or Friday. And by then, we could have gone through 5 different iterations of this system. So, but
true,
at this moment, or the reason I just wanted to kind of like point out a couple of the reasons they're clearly doing this is because the capacity and the reliability of the attraction is not perfect. And I think by doing this, if you only have 50 people in the queue and there's a breakdown. Only 50 people know about it, and only 50 people are going to tweet about it, and only 50 people need to be given. They were giving out cookies. Chewie and Ray was walking through the queue if there was a breakdown the last couple of days, handing out like treats and bananas and bottles of $6 water from Batuu. And they only have to do that. But if everyone was in line and they weren't doing a virtual line, can you imagine like trying to like corral and keep everyone calm? And every time it would break down throughout the day, we would have thousands of tweets. It broke down again, but that's not the case when you only have 50 people in the queue. So it's kind of like an evil genius thing that they've done, but also it allows us to do other things while we wait because it's completely unreliable. Instead of giving us like a fast pass return time at 2, like if there's no way to predict that they'll be ready for us at 2. So it's like more like you're waiting in line virtually, like that's literally what it is. I was shocked that at 6 a.m. I'm walking down Sunset Boulevard and going, and I'm seeing the fake Snope and the lasers and the projection mapping on Tower of Terror. And I'm like, how am I not standing in line hating myself right now? Like I get to go on Tower of Terror at 6 a.m. This is like a free after hours event. That's what this has become. So
yeah, that's what it felt like.
I went on
yeah.
Tower of Terror and there was no one there in line. And it actually is a lot creepier when there's no one there in line, except for the Christmas projection mapping happening above me. I went on Rock and Roller Coaster twice and I bought a soda and then all of a sudden my boarding group is called and it's like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Again, it kind of mirrors in its function. It mirrors the Max Pass at Disneyland where it's like, hey, we understand that you don't want to wait online. We don't want you waiting online because if you're waiting online, you ain't spending money. So book all of it through your phone. We'll see you later.
You have to be in the park to do that, right? There, even
yeah, you have to check in. So it's literally this. It's the same exact thing. The Max Pass is a mirror. Well, I should say the way that they're doing the virtual queue with Rise is a mirror of how the Max Pass works in Disneyland. But this, yeah, this worked out really well. And yeah, like you, I went over to Tower of Terror and then when both lands opened, I had the later boarding party. So I was like, all right, I don't need to go into Galaxy's Edge yet because there's no reason for me to go there right now. I went over to Toy Story Slinky. And I rode Slinky, yeah. Which I won't, you know, I won't wait 25 minutes or 30 minutes for Slinky. But if I can walk on it, it's a very enjoyable like little break. Yeah. And I got to look at and you get a really great view of Galaxy's Edge. Yeah. So that's what I did with my time. I did that. Yeah. Then I eventually grabbed a breakfast Ronto wrap because I'm a sane human being. And
I was just going to say, we were going to go to Slinky next, but then we got called. But then we got into – as soon as we got scanned into the line, it broke down for the first time on the first day. And I'm like, oh, no, it's beginning. And instead of making us just stand there and wait, even though we just entered, they gave us all a fast pass to come back as soon as it's running. They're like, you can come back anytime today, but we'll let you know when it's running. And they did. They actually sent a push notification saying it's back up. And I was like, whoa. But I'm like, okay, well, it could be down for at least 45 minutes. That's how long a reset is, according to my – like what people told me. I was like, you know what? Breakfast Ronto wrap.
Yeah.
So we went there. I had just enough time to get a breakfast Ronto wrap. And then I was worried I'd be waiting some longer time. So I was like, you know what? I'll get a soda and I'll get that weird popcorn Outpost mix that's like sweet and spicy and tastes a little bit like soap. And I like it though. I'm not going to lie. I like it. I'm waiting for the chocolate. They haven't introduced chocolate here yet. And I'm heading over and I'm like, I bet you anything. It's been 40 minutes. In 5 minutes, they're going to open this queue. And they did. And I was like, okay. And then we went right on the ride. So that worked out great for me. I'm having a blast. I'm like, I did a whole like half day's worth of stuff at Hollywood Studios, which is mostly all they have to do is a half day anyway.
Yeah. It's funny. Like,
and it's only 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. It's funny how time has reverted where like when they were first building that park, it was going to be a half day park. And then they made it into a full day over time. And now it's like, well, kind of a half day again, but they're fixing that, you know, they're fixing that. Obviously this is massive. And then in May, you know, we have Mickey and Minnie's opening up, or is it March? I think it's May,
March 5th.
So that will be huge. I actually think that attraction is going to blow people away in a way that they're not expecting.
I think it's like this, but for kids. Like, I think it's going to be just as impressive as this is, but more like on a younger, broader scale. The glass is 3D. It's like a more fun version. This is like a scary version. That's a more fun version. And they're both going to blow people away. It's a shame they're in the same park because it's almost like too good. Like, they have so many good attractions in this park.
I don't think it's a bad park anymore. You can see where like, hey, Beauty and the Beast show, you're starting to show your age.
Hey, lasers in The Little Mermaid, what's going on? Oh, did you see that at the end of the day, they didn't have enough time to get everyone on that they gave out boarding passes to. So everyone got a free park ticket. Everyone got a fast pass return for the next day. So essentially they're paying for you to come back the next day and they're saying, I'm sorry. And then as soon as the ride comes up, you have an all day fast pass to go on the ride in a park that you're getting free entry to. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean,
Disney, are you sure you want to be this nice?
Yeah. I mean, I think again, they've you know, looked at some, you know, the way other things have been opening and kind of been a mess.
Hagrid.
Yeah,
Hagrid.
You know, and even their own history, like they're not perfect by any means. You know, attractions are hard things. And as we get further and further into this world of like, hey, you got to top that. Hey, you got to top that, which I think us as consumers, we also have to start understanding and appreciating the step back attractions where it's not like this is the most intense thing you'll ever see. Like sometimes I just want a boat ride, you know, like those things exist, yeah. Like Small World. Whatever, I know, stupid jokes aside, you know, Small World and other small attractions, dark rides like Snow White and Everyone Loves Mr. Toad Now, you know, things like that. Those are not technically hee-haws, but you go on them because they give you a different sense of satisfaction. Yeah. And
you mean like a slow-moving Bantha ride around the
land? Yeah. In all sincerity, yeah. Because then you would have like the calming, like, oh, this is really cool. Then you have the interactive, as long as you're – I mean, yeah. I hate to say it, but I only enjoy Smuggler's Run if I'm with like four or more of my friends. Unfortunately, that's just kind of built into it. But when I get to go on with four or more of my friends, Smuggler's Run is the most fun I have on an attraction, straight up.
It is yeah. a blast. If I don't know the people, it's usually me yelling at
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Like, center us. Shoot it. Shoot the harpoons. Press the orange button.
Just press the shining button. Like next to you. You know, and now we have Rise, which is the best spoiler-free example I can give of Rise is I love Great Movie Ride. It was one of my favorite attractions. I understand why it went away, but it was one of my favorite attractions. If Great Movie Ride was on cocaine and, like, and times like a million, that's kind of Rise, you know, for one.
No, but not just that, but all the characters are looking at you.
Yeah, and so
they're talking to you.
And let me preface this. I love Universal Studios. I really do. But we were on the Hogwarts Express, and there was a child. It was like a 13, 15-year-old innocent child. And they said, that's not Hermione. And I and like I looked at their parents and I was like, you got a good one. He's good. Good kid. And I think that goes so far. So seeing the things that you see in this attraction, they see the movies and they're like, I know these people. I want to see these people. And that's what this stuff is for. Like, look, I'm 41 years old as of yesterday. And I don't need attractions to be specifically built for me anymore. The movies that when I was young came out, those are 40 something years ago. I have a million ways to enjoy those things. It's fine. I don't need Darth Vader walking around Galaxy's Edge. I just don't need it because there's a new slew of things and they're a blast and kids love them. And them getting to see that right up close. And then for us, the older crowd, being able to kind of maybe point out like, oh, I know that voice actor. That's, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of fun.
I know there. The Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, I know the Wilhelm scream. Is that, yep. Like, I have an unlogical interest in Nub Nub. And, and he's there. He's there. And I'm like, oh. I thought you died. I legitimately thought that character was dead. So that was, there you go. But all right, okay. What are we talking about? You want to talk about the queue? Are we even in the queue yet?
Yeah.
There?
No, now we're getting to the queue, and we'll speed through some of the Pandora queue and then get into the good stuff. But now spoilers, not only spoilers in what we are saying, but I assure you everything in the visual version of this YouTube video is a spoiler because I'm just showing raw uncut footage of everything I saw. There it is. Here it is. And if you want to see edited version, I got a video up of my first run through the ride and you get to hear me just going wee the whole time. I posted a video of me on Primeval Whirl earlier on Twitter, and I didn't hear the audio till after I posted it and I watched it, and the whole time it's me going wee. People have comments, they're like, there's something just so like satisfying about someone saying wee and having fun. Yeah. Take that. I like Dino-Rama. So yeah, spoilers. yeah, the queue, there's water. There's a water feature. I know that was people's complaints. There's a water feature. And it's right at the beginning, so you don't have to pee yet from waiting in line. and you get to walk behind the water, so it's the backside of water.
Backside of water. Oh. Ba-da-bump-bump.
I took a picture of it. I was like, the line was moving really fast because they do it in the little small boarding groups. And I'm walking fast and I stop. And the people behind me are like, what are you doing? It's like, I got to take a picture of the backside of water. This just had to happen. But the queue is like, it's okay up until the actual pre-shows. Like it's a lot of, I think it's supposed to be drab on purpose so that it's such a contrast to the spaceship. Like that's the whole point, is that we're in a cave. It's just like an emergency base that they set up temporarily. They have like three rooms. What do they have? Like that? They have, well, four rooms. There's like a map room, an equipment room, an armory, their uniforms, a medical science room. And it's like, it's mostly just stuff in cabinets that you can kind of look at while you wait, and it's nothing that, but there's benches.
There
I can't
are. They,
stress it
they,
enough.
They like they have like rock hewn kind of benches that it fits into the look of the whole spot, and it doesn't scream, hey, we put benches here, but there are benches, you know, which is nice. Like
you can tell that they laser cut these caves, and like while they were laser cutting them, they're like, let's throw in some benches.
Yeah.
Some dude, some dude wanted a break while he was cutting, that's all.
It's like the resistance, you know, we're busy resisting, but also we need to sit down sometimes.
Yeah, and you know what, as a fool who had a surgery about 3 weeks ago, those benches, very handy. But as you said, they're not overly interesting. They're just enough to be like, oh, okay, we're definitely in Star Wars. Like, there's no question about it. I'm in a Star Wars attraction.
Yeah. I recognize these blasters. I recognize these outfits from, like, this is a squadron outfit. Okay, sure.
Yeah. All this stuff is familiar to me. I know where I am. But much like the queue, the actual, like, where the queue begins and ends on Smugglers, it's not overly long.
No, it actually isn't. There were reports that this was going to be longer than Flight of Passage, and it is like a third as long.
Yeah, no, Flight of Passage, you got to pack a lunch, even if you have a fast pass. It's not, you know, it's not that the granddaddy, the king of the mountain, is the old Dueling Dragons queue.
Oh,
Dueling Dragons,
still the longest, I think.
Yeah, is it?
As far as ones in Orlando.
I remember that thing. But yeah, it's very easy walkthrough. You're not in there very long. It's spacious enough, but it's not sexy. Like, it's not trying to be sexy. It's not trying to wow you with its visuals.
It's purposely desensitizing you. There's no music.
Yeah.
There's like a low hum. It's not even that interesting of sound in the background. There's nothing on the walls except for lights. It's like, it's mostly just like, here's some equipment.
Yeah.
That
you're
need
going through
because we're the resistance.
You're going through a barracks area, and that's what it is, because
and it's brilliant. Because
if, because if you're wondering when the fun's going to start, the fun's going to start when you get on the actual ride. Like, that's where the money is.
Now, there's extended queue that I didn't have to walk through outside, which is even less interesting. Mm-hmm. But there's at least outside, they have a radio playing where you can hear different like generals and stuff saying announcements or whatever. You know, Tom Morrow, please come to the whatever, you know. but I didn't get to wait in that queue, but I saw the water. So I think I got the gist of it. But the first pre-show. Which I, up until this, I've always been describing it as pre-shows, and like there's like, I've been making jokes, there's like 4.5 pre-shows, and then I realize now it is just one experience, because there's no gaps in between at least the first three moments. Mm-hmm. It is just go, go, go.
Yeah,
so the mission briefing is the first pre-show, and the mission briefing has BB-8 just hanging out up there, and then Rey comes in a hologram. And gives us our mission. And there's some screens that show the characters. Was it General or Commander Beck? Commander Beck.
Commander Beck, I believe. And we also see Finn.
And Poe. Oh, we see Poe.
Oh, we see Poe. Okay.
Yeah, because he's outside revving up his X-Wing.
Yeah.
And we see Neum Nub.
Yep, yep. Yep, yep.
Yes. Yub Nub? And How, what'd you think of the special effect for the Ray hologram?
I thought it looked really good. It wasn't like the old scratchy tech that you would, you know, that like when R2-D2 is projecting Leia, it's cleaner than that, but that makes more sense because we are, you know, 30 years later from that.
Well, and also it's a giant apparatus. It's not coming from a teeny pinhole.
Yeah.
It's like, a giant like thing. And it's like, it feels like it has more power because it's a crystallar image.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense in universe.
That's Musion, right? They use Musion for that?
I would assume so. I couldn't find the seam. I'm really trying to find, like, I can get on Tower of Terror and see the angled glass on the ground. Like,
you can
clearly see it. I can't see the angled glass on this, and it bugs me.
And
like,
she's
I can
almost,
see the top.
I mean, she's almost one-to-one size.
Yeah. And you know, she, like, I swear she's looking at you no matter what side of the room you're on. I swear. Yeah. I don't know how it's happening.
And BB-8, you know, he's kind of moving around the way – he's kind of angled in the way that he pops out into the scene, the way that Rocket does when you are on Guardians.
Yeah. That was the first thing I said. I was like, this is Rocket. That's Rocket. And which is fine. Like, I've always wanted our own Rocket here. So I'm glad that we got BB-8. He's so cute when he pokes his head around the corner.
But it feels good. You know, it's Daisy Ridley. Like, it's Daisy Ridley and she's there. And it, I don't know. That made me really smile because, again, you think, I mean, I know they're still making the movie and, you know, they were, you know, they just finished all that kind of stuff recently. Who knows what the future will hold for these characters, but.
Yeah, Boyega saying he's not going to be on TV. He's like, I don't want to be Disney Plus'd. He's like, I'm only going to do the movies. And it's like, well, you did the ride. So thank you.
Yeah. So I think it's really nice. It immediately tells you, okay, they went all out. They got everyone to be here and this is going to, I think this helps in the longevity of the ride. I really
do. Well, Forbidden Journey, when they did Harry Potter, the kids were still kids and they were still filming the last three movies. So it was easy to get all of them. They literally had all of them in the room. But then when they went to do the later ones, they'd already finished the movies and the kids were no longer kids. And they're like, no, except for one. Thank you, Rupert. I think this is what the music kind of is there already. Like as soon as like it starts swelling up as she's asking you to join or like, thank you for joining the cause.
Yeah.
And you start to feel like, okay, maybe I'm a little invested in this.
Yeah. And she gives you the plot. Like she also just gives you the whole plot for the ride. It's basically now, you know, about like us, you know where we are. So
I'm endangering your lives.
Yeah.
I'm telling you secret information. Wait, lady, I didn't ask for secret information. And you're coming with us.
Yeah. And so now you're going to meet up with General Organa, which I actually was very surprised that they used Leia because, you know, who knows what happens in the next movie and all that. But I was very surprised because that gives us a definite date, even though it already had like a definite date.
Well,
but I thought that was an interesting choice to keep Leia also as like vital and alive and part of this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was nice.
How many people are in that pre-show room? Is it like 30 or 40 or something? Maybe tops, maybe.
I don't even know if it's that many, but yeah, it you're not cramped in there by any means.
I think it's like 30.
Maybe 30,
32. We'll go with that. 32. Okay. Nice round number.
There you go. All right.
As soon as the door is open, they're like, you know, your shuttle is waiting for you outside and the door's open and it actually is outside. Everyone gasps. And I'm like, this is going to be a recurring thing. We're going to be gasping for a while. The door's open. Everyone's like, whoa. Because like you would never expect to be in a long queue, deep underground, apparently, and then in a pre-show and then the next room not be inside. If we're not on an outside ride and then all of a sudden we're walking outside and we see Poe's X-Wing in our shuttle and BB-8's already in place and Poe's inside, I assume. You can't really see through the window. I think they got a mannequin in there from the Fast and Furious ride. But everyone is like, their mind is already blown. And I'm like, guys, keep your mind in check. There's so much more.
But I was, when you stepped outside and, you know, exactly as you described it, that really, even with all the other stuff that we're going to talk about, that's incredibly impressive in the visual presentation of everything you see here. That moment was probably the most surprising, just because mentally I never prepared for, hey, you're going to go back outside and that's where the X-Wing's going to be. I thought they had that X-Wing, you know, tucked away in the queue somewhere or something like that. But
and like it's got the noise of like an engine. So it feels like you're out on like a like you're at an airport and you're just stepping outside and there's an airplane that's already revving. Like, it feels like you're just out there and they're rushing you and they're in character and the Resistance are like, go, go, go. We got to get to the shuttle. We got to get to the shuttle. Like, everyone wants to take pictures or whatever and take their time, like on the Millennium Falcon, but you can't, you got to keep going.
Guys, put your phones away. Just enjoy the moment.
How's the shuttle look when you walk up to it?
Big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, everything looks like everything looks to scale because it is.
Yeah.
You know, you walk up to a ship and it's a ship that can hold 30 people because then it does.
Yeah.
And everything feels like that. Just feel like you're going through a film. It's really crazy.
That's awesome.
And there's got to be people who get to this point and think this is the ride because it's like you're entering a ride vehicle. It's a massive ship. It's like it's bigger than Star Tours, you know? And you get into it and the doors shut and like it goes to take off. And inside we got a really impressive animatronic for Commander Beck and the back of the head of Neob Nub. I can't say.
Yeah, he's up there. No one can. Don't worry about it. It's a secret.
This is okay. We talked about this nearly a year ago, I think in January on our podcast, like episode 2 of our podcast ever, or maybe it was 4, episode 4, A New Hope. That's right. Episode 4, A New Hope. I remember making that joke and and Ian groaned at me then. Yep. We talked about this and I said, and it's going to be on a turntable. And I said, you probably won't feel it because it'll be going slow the whole time. I was wrong. It goes in bursts. I never would have guessed in a million years, but it takes advantage of the fact that it's on a turntable. And if you look out the back window, when it takes off at a curve and you feel your ship curving and then it like slows down its spinning so that it can like, now you're floating in space. And then it does it again when you're taking evasive maneuvers away from being shot at. And then it does it again when you're being sucked into the ship. And it's like, oh my God. Only an Imagineer would come up with the fact that, hey, we're spinning anyway. Let's do it in bursts. It's so smart.
And to be clear, you're not sitting down for this. You know, it's like a subway station.
It's back up, yeah.
Yeah, you're standing. There's some things. There's some handlebars to hold on to and whatnot. But you're standing and you have something to occupy your vision to the front and back of the vehicle and above your head because there's a lot. There's, you know, all – to what you're going through, light effects are going on through the ceiling as well.
It almost feels like there's windows above you, even though they're not, because the LED effects are so perfectly timed with like being shot at or shooting or shields going up or just the darkness of space. And the back window, the kids love the back window because they can actually sit right up against it or stand right up against it. Like you can put your hands on the back window. So kids love that. The adults love the front window because it's a little bit higher up and they can see, you know, Neodub from the old movies. There's TV screens everywhere showing the characters. We're communicating with Resistance fighters and Poe is telling us he's going to like, because we're supposed to be jumping to light speed to head to that other planet where their new base is. But we are interrupted and we can't get a clear line to get to light speed because there's always something in our way. Mm-hmm. Pete, did you notice the ground, the actual ship moved besides the turning?
Actually, I'll say on the first time that I wrote it, my assumption was that the ship towards the front of us was the one that was like pulling us in.
Oh yeah.
When it's not, it's the one behind us. And I didn't catch that the first time.
Did you catch the ground moving beneath your feet? Besides the turning?
No, I mean, I felt, you know, a little bit of rumbling and, you know, you feel like you're actually moving, but I didn't feel it like physically move. I think in the way that you're referring.
I need to go on
it
a third time because I swear it goes a little bit pitch left and right. And I don't know if it happens because it's like at an angle. Maybe it's just like a wobbly turntable.
No. In that sense, absolutely. Like, again, it made me feel like I was on an incredibly smooth subway. Okay. Where like you get that, you know, left and right, up and down a little bit on your feet. Yeah,
definitely. Like, it's only like an inch in each direction, but it's enough that you really feel like you're flying through space. It's like not full on Star Tours because you're standing up, but it's also like, wow, Disney, you're just like gonna like let us be on something with a moving base underneath. Okay, sure.
Yeah, you don't really have to be holding on to anything. Mm-hmm. Like you could, like there's things around you to hold on to, but it's not like if you're not holding on something, you're going to tip over and fall. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I do think that they, yeah, I think that there's a little bit of wiggle in that, in, you know, how, when you're standing, you get a little bit of left and right.
I had someone comment on my, my POV video, and this is the first time I ever wrote it. And they're like, you're the only POV video I saw that actually shows both the front and the back. And because I ran back and forth on the side of the ship, and I'm like, I want to see the back. I want to see the front. I want to see the back again. I want to see the front again. Like a little kid going back and forth. And the fact that I could do that, but then at the same time, I have to steady myself every once in a while when it starts turning again. Because I'm like, whoa. Yeah, did not expect that to actually be so much of a ride. I just expected a fake rumble and that was it. So I was pleasantly surprised, but oh, they put shuttle doors on the left and the right.
Yeah. Oh, this was such a good
when you get sucked into the ship,
man,
and they're like, and then like General Hux is on the screen. It's like, prepare to be boarded, and the doors open. Everyone's looking the wrong way. They're all looking at the other door. We've been conditioned, like whether it be Gringotts elevator, Men in Black elevator, which surprisingly are right next to each other, or the Haunted Mansion stretching room. We're conditioned to go in one door and go out the other door. And this is not that case. Everyone turned around and realized it was the same door we came in. And that's something that we talked about in January. So to all our listeners, I am sorry for ruining that surprise for all of y'all. Because it was so mind-blowing to see everyone else get their mind blown. Like, and it's, the door's open. Pete, what do you think about that moment?
I loved it. I thought, yeah, again, I think it's a smart... It's a misdirection, even if it's not entirely meant that way, because they had to design it this way so we can load up two people at the same time. It works towards the norm of what we as park guests are used to. And then turning around and getting a reveal on top of a reveal, basically, was special. Oh, and just
it's a double gasp.
Yeah. Beck, for all you Star Wars Clone Wars fans out there, that's James Arnold Taylor. He's actually the voice. So you're Obi-Wan from the old Clone Wars show. He's doing the voice for Beck, which I thought was really cool.
That's cool.
So yeah, wow, the hangar.
It's whatever you think, it's bigger. Whatever you think in your mind, yeah, it's bigger than that.
That's the biggest message to get across is that I had an idea. You know, I stay away from everything. I don't watch videos and stuff before I go and stuff. I don't look. I don't even look at photos. I try to avoid everything.
Yeah. I didn't watch any POVs, or I even stopped watching the official footage being released from Disney the week before because it was starting to spoil too much. I knew the layout of this ride, but I did not want to see it. So it was still shocking and surprising every turn away. But yeah, so yeah. This room.
The scale of that room is incredible, and what really does it is that there's a First Order, you know, TIE fighter. It's just there,
like full.
And, it's like an actual TIE fighter, and yeah, all the stormtroopers there, you know, with their heads slightly moving. Obviously, like we have to be realistic; they're not going to make 50 full moving animatronics. That's insane.
Yeah, but then they have First Order officers board our shuttle. Like as soon as the door opens, they walk right up to you and go, by order of General Hux, you are to come with us. And it's like, whoa, 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 get out of my space. This is our shuttle. And then like a normal Disney ride, like, please continue forward. No, this is not that ride. Like he boards it and he's like, you're essentially saying you're all under arrest. Come with me.
See, this is goes into like still what I said before about the Great Movie Ride. The Great Movie Ride, and also like an attraction like Jungle Cruise, so much of it depends, or a fair chunk of it depends on the cast members and how they're, you know, are they into their thing? Are they there? And this is not only depending on the performances of singular cast members, but the number of them who are playing the parts, because there are so many actual human beings in costumes, all playing the part of first order officers and this and that. That it helps with the illusion of this troop of stormtroopers that, you know, their heads move a little bit and this and that. But it's the combination of real life movement and that slight movement that just marries each other really well.
Yeah, they don't act like cast members. The closest thing is maybe the Tower of Terror or Haunted Mansion, where they're not supposed to smile and they kind of can ham it up. This is that, but they actually, they speak in ways that you wouldn't normally speak on a ride. They speak in, like, they have lines, essentially, like movie lines to say to you, or certain ways to say certain things. So even though it's like, please fill all available space, they wouldn't say that. They're like, please keep moving forward. You know, your detention is on its way, or like whatever. Like they're so into it. For my first ride, because you're split up into like rows of four, and he's like, there seems to be five in this row and three in this row. One of you will have to move to the other row. I assure you, you'll be able to hear your friend's screams. Like, oh my God, like I just totally went for it. Like, yeah, this is 8 o'clock in the morning on opening day, and that guy just won.
I put out this challenge, though. Does every single officer in the First Order have to sound British?
They kind of do in the original trilogy.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I want an Irishman. I want one Irish
officer. What an Australian.
I want an Australian yelling at me. You know. But anyways. Yeah, so this room is just incredible. And hey, you want to know the purpose of this room? Just so you can walk through it and just like be like, wow.
That was it for like 15 seconds.
It's amazing.
Like the amount of budget that they threw into this room, which is essentially a hallway to another room, is out of this world.
Like any other time, this would be like 400 switchbacks. We're in this room for an hour. Like they want to get every little bit of budget. The ride should go through it six times. Like that's how this Indiana Jones main room. That's what this is. We need to get all our monies out of this room. But to anyone who hasn't been on the ride, and if you have been on the ride and you didn't, please turn around once you walk into that room. The entire transport shuttle is in there with you. And it is mind-blowing because, like we said earlier, it's a big shuttle. And it is just sitting in this room with you.
There's so much to look at, but you're in and out of the rooms relatively quickly. But that's the point. Like, again, that's the reason, you know, a magician doesn't want to show you the same trick five times, because you're going to start picking up on, oh, well, I see that now. I see that.
Did you notice the roof tiles? And it's not just in this room, but also the AT-AT room on the ride. Did you notice the like dark blue roofing tile, the ceiling tiles in these rooms?
I did not.
Like they invented a new type of Star Wars ceiling, because usually we don't see that. The camera never pans up in a Star Wars movie and like goes, ooh, look at the molding. So they had to invent what a ceiling might look like because they never built it on a movie set. And they did a really good job. It's like, I feel like I'm on a spaceship. That's a neat ceiling. So look behind you and look at the ceiling next time you're in the hangar, to everyone listening. Yeah. Okay. So there's like a couple hallways, like an L hallway, just to take us to the interrogation room hallway, and then they sort us into groups. Like I said, amazing theater. The sound design in this area, because we were in the shuttle, and the shuttle was, we were literally in a gunfight with like, we were in a Star War, as it were, and there was loud music and like bombastic stuff, Beck screaming, like Poe screaming, everyone's screaming, and then we get boarded, and instantly it's silent. And I like, then there's like a droning background sound of the ship that we're on, the Star Destroyer, and very low key John Williams score, very like half volume. And if you watch the Star Wars movies, whenever like there's something like tension building happening on a Star Destroyer, that's the kind of music you hear, where it's like super quiet. And I just thought that was brilliant. It's like, we're in a scene in a movie right now, and it really makes you feel like you're. I said it, if you watch in my POV, I feel like we're being booked. I feel like I'm in handcuffs at the police station and they're about to interrogate me. It's just unsettling enough that you actually feel like you're in danger. And I think that low key music is incredibly important, coming from the super bombastic music of the ship. And then into the, like, we're captured by the First Order, and there's all hope is lost at this point, is what it's trying to convey to you.
And you can get that, exactly what you're talking about, that sort of musical cue. If you watch, you know, New Hope, when they're sneaking around the Death Star, you know, outside of like when they're actually, you know, shooting at people and whatnot. Right. And when Rey is sneaking around in Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
When she's sneaking around the Force Awakens. Yeah. Same kind of play. Same kind of play. So
and
it kind of mirrors that. Cool. They're there are people who watch, you know, they are students of those films and now they have jobs, yeah, you know, exactly. Making those.
You can tell it's the fans of the series who know it well enough to actually execute it in all sensory levels. And that's another thing about why the original Resistance base is so dull, is so that when we get up here, it's so clean and sharp and like clean lines and the opposite. It's not cut rock. It is like molded plastic. And the idea is that it's so different that you really feel like you're in space. You don't feel like you're in another section of a room. We left the Resistance base and went outside, got into a ship, flew to space, and everyone in there honestly feels like we are above the planet. Like it really seems like you are no longer in like a ride building. You are in space and we have to find our way back down to Batu. And I think they sell that idea by doing contrasting music cues, contrasting visual cues, and just even the Resistance being like your friends and happy, and the First Order being, you know, drab and mean and British. Like, it's so perfectly executed. And then, okay.
But what if they were mean and Scottish?
The interrogation room. First of all, when the doors open, you're like, whoa, this room is weird. It's almost like that room that gets smaller in the Wonka factory. Like,
it is. It's the Wonka factory. That's exactly what I thought.
And you're like, whoa, am I going to fit in this room? It's so tiny.
Yeah. I instinctively, I wanted to start like hitting the walls and be like, where's the door, Wonka? I wanted to do that immediately. Yeah, it's 100% someone made the Wonka room.
I think it's psychological, where like our hope is narrowing. Like it's physically an interpretation of what we're supposed to feel. And then we turn around, the doors close, and above it, there's like Stormtrooper walking around. It's a Mugen effect, but it's done really well. And then General Hux comes in and he's asking essentially, where's the new base going to be? Which none of us remember. Ray was talking. We were enamored. We were like, oh, I don't remember the name of the planet. Listen, I don't know.
I'm actually useless to you. Yeah. Like, I'm actually not the best person to ask because I didn't take notes.
So Kylo Ren comes in and like, he puts his arm out, the lights turn off, and it's like, whoa, 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 this guy's serious. I really wish I did know so I could tell him. I don't. Did you notice?
The shadows.
I thought I was the only one to notice. I leaned over to my friends and I'm like, they're casting shadows.
I could not believe that someone went to the effort of doing that, because I pointed it out to my buddy, Josh, who was with us on yesterday. Was that yesterday? Oh my God. That's a long day. And I was like, guy, they have shadows. And I had to point at him, you know, up, look up. They have shadows.
Because it's like, and he looked back. Like,
well, yeah. Ridiculous. But like, there's no real reason to spend the time and the money to develop that outside of, look, someone might notice this.
And so make them have shadows. Noticed it than I thought. When I mentioned it, like, they're like, yeah, I know. That was the best thing about that scene. I couldn't focus on the scene the first time because I'm sitting here, like, my brain is like, does Mugen cast shadows when, like, rear projected? Can they reproject Mugen and it make the light disappear? And then I watched it the second time and I was like, oh my God, they have, like, some kind of physical object in front of a projector of light changing in time with the Mugen, or they have a projector instead of a light and it's exactly in tune, which is entirely possible because in the Imagineering story they talk about how they use projectors as lights now, so they can change the light and projection map instead of light, so it makes more contours. So I think I just accidentally figured it out just right now. I think it's a projector acting as a light.
Yeah, I think it's a projector because the movement is not stilted in any way. It's so smooth. It looks like someone animated it.
Oh, know? My God. The whole room is lit essentially by the light behind them. So when they walk back and forth, it's like casting a shadow on us, essentially. Like they're looming over us and we are hopeless. And that's when the wall gets a giant slice open and we're rescued by the Resistance. Like, at our most hopeless moment, they walk out of the room and they're like, we'll be back. Because they're needed on the bridge or whatever, which is where we see them later.
Yeah, they stick with that story. Yeah, Hux tells him, you're needed on the bridge, and is very pasty.
Later, and then he walks off, and then bzz, bzz, and everyone turns and the wall opens up. Did the Resistance people on the other side of the wall, like, were they super into it too for you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they were like, we got to go. Let's go.
Like, as soon as it opens up, they turn to us and they're like, we're the resistance and we're here to save you. And the music swells. And it's like, oh my God. And it really feels like, oh good, our friends are here because we've been trapped in jail.
But also at the same time, there's that realistic thing of like, I got to also remember the color that I was told before so I know where I'm going.
Apparently they're having issues like that, and people are getting and just jumping into the front car in the front row.
I think that's also just because people don't pay attention. But
No.
You know, you could have a sign that says come here and they'd be like, where, there? Like, yes, there. Oh.
When we got into the interrogation room, because the First Order officer guy was like, it's very important that you remember the colors that you're standing on now and move them. I thought the interrogation room was going to have the colors. I'm looking at the floor and I'm like, it's dark in here. I can't see the colors.
It's a weird thing, though, because you're told, hey, remember this color, but then you don't need it in the next room. You need it in the following room. And there's such a heightened, like, we got to go, because you are, like, you're actually escaping at this point. That, yeah, I can see it. It's going to be a little bit of a stumbling point for most people. But the cast members that we saw got them right. Like, everyone had to go. They all got them where they had to get to. And then wow. And then the actual attraction starts, which
all
right, is crazy.
That's all we have time for. Good night, everyone. Oh, no. Okay. We haven't even gotten to the ride yet. And we're at, like, you know, 12 minutes of pre-shows at this point and a little bit of waiting in between. But it doesn't feel – it all feels like one continuous thing in a very, like, new kind of way, like a living theater kind of way. It doesn't feel like I'm in a pre-show. It's not like end of Fly at Flight of Passage. We're just watching this thing and it's supposed to be live. And it, like, we all know it's pre-recorded and boring.
Yeah, it's more, this is actually the interactive portion of the ride. You can call it that. Like, even though you're not making any specific choices, you know, your interactivity is following orders and being, and like physically filling the space of the attraction while not in a ride vehicle. So this would be like the interactive part, because the cast members are interacting with you directly and speaking and looking at you and in character and making you feel like
they kind of picked a good story too, because, you know, we're being booked in a prison and then we're being busted out. It's a great excuse to keep us moving to the next thing. It's like, hey, follow us.
And you want to go. You're like, I want to see what's next. Even if that's like your main drive, you're like, my God, what's in the next one?
So the story is, we get into these prisoner transport vehicles, and the droids are like under the control of the resistance, and they're going to lead us out to the escape pods and get out of here. And I love that. That's the entire plot now, is that we're just trying to get to the escape pods. But every time we turn around, there's something else in our way. And that's it. That's the whole ride. Like, you go here. No, we can't go here. Well, we go here. No, we can't go there either.
You're just being chased. You're being chased and you're being pursued and being captured and being, you know, getting caught up in other things that are going on while this happens.
Right out the gate, we see two other cars and they mix that into the story really well. Those are actually the two cars that are replacing us in the load room. Like, those are empty cars coming from unload, like in the real world, but they've done it in such a way that we're like spinning around in a circle room, and Commander Beck is like on the intercom talking to the droid, and it's like, tell them we're transporting a prisoner. And the droid goes, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, boop. Did it work? Boop, boop, boop. Which sounds to me like, I don't know. That was my Forky impression. I just inadvertently did. I don't know. So we turn a corner. There's a probe droid. I think that's what they're called, right? They have all the little sticky things. It's huge. It's massive.
It's really huge.
I want to say, and that's goes for everything on this ride. Everything is bigger than you think it is. The ride vehicle is twice as big as you think it is. The rooms are twice as big as you think they are. Any POV you're watching, it's wrong. It's twice as big as that.
And I remember, you know, first walking through Galaxy's Edge, where there's a probe droid near like the droid junkyard near the restrooms. And I was like, wow, that's a full-size probe droid. But now that full-size probe droid, like, drops in front of my face and is active and is making the, you know, that noise. And I was like, man, all right, this is
now.
Let's go.
Which car are you in? Are you in the one that was closest to the probe droid at that at the first time it comes up?
So here's the weird part. Yeah, I was the front car on the probe droid both times, but I'll also say, on my first trip, I was in the red and blue cart, and in my second one, I was in the orange and white. Yeah. But it was the same experience.
Yeah, and that happened to me too, where I got into the back car and I got into the front car, but ended up the back car in the AT-AT scene both times, or the front car in the probe droid scene both times. So it definitely that dancing moment where you're circling around with the other cars, depending on when those cars are coming in, will change which car you're going to be in. So you can't really know which ride you're going to get. You can't like say, hey, can I get the Western or can I get the gangster at the load thing, like a great movie ride? You can't. They don't know. I think
this is great. This helps the replayability because it's a roll the dice each time. Like you can't say, oh, I got it on red and blue, because I loaded up on the orange and white and I said to myself, oh, cool, I'll be able to see the other version now. And I didn't. And it wasn't disappointing, but it now throws in that thing of, I don't know what I'm going to get each time. Yeah, so, hooray.
And have you gotten the other one, or has it just been the same one?
I have not. I've gotten the one where I guess the best way to describe it is I'm in front of the AT-AT walker.
Yes, that's when you go up.
That's the main difference.
And that's the good.
I mean, there's other differences.
I think that's the better experience, if you ask me. But I haven't done the other one, so I'm not sure.
Maybe I'll hit it. Maybe that'll be the one I get Wednesday. We'll see.
So the second, like after the probe droid, because that was supposed to be the what do they call an elevator? The lift, I guess, that we were going to take. We can't go that way. So we turn around and we turn a corner and there's stormtroopers up above. And it's kind of like a projection thing, but it's not too bad. But it subverts your expectations, though, because you're just looking at projections of stormtroopers and you're thinking to yourself, oh, that kind of looks believable. But when they start shooting at you and the ceiling starts exploding, and you're like, oh, my God, I'm being in danger now. I'm in danger.
And it's a tough effect, but there's the effect of the laser actually coming down at you.
Mm-hmm. I think this is where they use the fan blade thingy with the LED on the end of it. This is the
looks great.
This is, I thought it was in the AT-AT scene, but this scene is where you first see a blaster beam coming out in thin air. And I think it's through, like, I used to think it was a fan blade, but it's actually just like one, imagine like a fan with only one prong spinning really fast with an LED on the end of it. That's how it works. And it, but when it hits the wall, there's like projection mapping, the thing on Muppet Vision where the wall disappears and you see through it, there's a smoke effect that's projected and little sparks fly. So every time a blaster gets like shot at a wall or something, the wall becomes alive. You know, like, you know, when you're in video games back in the day and it would just like have that little bullet hit and then disappear. And then nowadays you hit a wall with a gun or whatever and the bullet hit stays. It's that. It's like we're living in the better version of a video game where damage is being done as we're flying around.
So cool.
I think also, that real impact is so important, but I also really appreciated that, you know, again, using the tech that you're referring to, it's the speed of which the blaster is being shot. So I don't know when they've done stuff like this before, like Chewie shoots his bowcaster on the stage show, but it's like meow, you know, like
it's a firework effect, right? It's like a bottle rocket.
Yeah, it's a firework effect. It's a bottle rocket. Yeah. And in this, it's a bam, like it's a laser shot. Like it's a laser shot from that stormtrooper and it feels right. It feels good.
And then when it hits something instantly, there's damage and like the roof started to get holes in it. And it's like because we backed up. So they started shooting and they kind of nipped the side of the wall, the ceiling above and chunks of the ceiling fell off. Like it happened so instantly. I think in my POV, you're like, whoa, you can hear me audibly gasp because I'm like, oh, it's this kind of ride. Like we're in danger.
Well, you're not really in danger. It's a stormtrooper shooting at you and they can't hit anything.
Well, like he's just 20 feet to the right. It's so far away from us. Okay. But the laser is real.
And just to be like really clear, this stuff is physical. You know, the stormtroopers are, you know, are screened up there and whatnot, but the environment around you is there. It's tactical. You can touch it. They've actually built it.
Okay, so then we turn into the AT-AT room.
Oh, I need to see this
room. And this is the next moment where everyone in the car audibly gasps. Even though we all know it's coming, it's in every commercial, it's in every image, it's in every piece of concept art. And yet when you turn the corner and you see it, you're like, whoa, it's bigger than you thought it was.
Yeah. And there's a mirror effect in this room. Yes. Or am I out of my mind?
No, you're right. It's a 5-story tall mirror. It's massive.
Yeah. Ridiculous. All it's doing is making you think that there's another room with like AT-ATs.
Yeah.
But you can only kind of see like part of an AT-AT. Like you don't see the whole room in full.
Unnecessary.
Like
I'm like, that's a third AT-AT. We only saw two getting constructed. Yeah. How was there a third? I thought it was a screen at first, had to go on the second time, and then I'm like, it's just a mirror. It's actually a mirror.
Yeah. So like towards the functionality of the attraction and what most people are going to notice, it's completely, you could put it under a list of unneeded.
Yeah.
But they went and did it because.
And it really, there's apparently mirrors in multiple rooms too, to make them all feel bigger, or that there's hallways that go on forever, like the Haunted Mansion. So there's more, I need to write it again and point out all the mirror effects, because this one, as soon as I went through, I'm like, I'm missing on my first ride, I'm missing all of the amazing projection mapped effects and the blasters and two sets of stormtroopers shooting. And I'm missing all that because I'm like, how is there a third AT-AT back there? but I love the bullet hits. Every time it hits something or ricochets and the sound design, and like, you feels like you're in. And then, since we at this point we're in the back car, the front car gets to a dead end and we end up backing up and going a different way. So now we're on our second route to try to find a lift down. And that's when we find a lift up by accident.
Wait, isn't in the AT-AT? Oh, yeah. The AT-AT room. Isn't there people like tucked in little corners and hallways? Isn't there like one or two animatronics more in there that like kind of hidden?
There's a fin.
There's a fin.
There's a fin. It's actually technically two fin animatronics. No matter which way you go, you get a fin animatronic.
That's what I thought. I just didn't see it clearly in the POV I watched.
The one that we got has a random arm in front of him shooting a blaster. It's like pew pew, and then it blocks Finn, like blocks Finn's view, like our view of Finn, and then it like slowly creeps out of the way. But he's sitting there, and he looks like Sigourney Weaver on the Great Movie Ride, all leaned up against the wall and scared. And he's telling us we need to go down the lift, and he's like, "Not up! What are you doing?"
Yes, you go up.
This is where we're facing in the car we're in. We're facing one of the heads of the AT-ATs, and I'm going to interchange how I say that every time just to annoy people. And there's like two stormtroopers on some kind of screen inside the, I don't know why they're in there, in like an AT-AT like storage facility. They're just hanging out inside the head waiting to be sent to a planet, I guess. And they're like, they look like they're almost like reading comic books and just chilling. And they're like, hey, look. Oh, that's what
I think the story you can put towards that is that there is a breakout happening. So they were just told to get in there now.
Okay. I like the idea. No, I like the comic book idea. So the stormtroopers we saw earlier, I meant to say, don't they say like, hey, I want to believe they say these are the prisoners we're looking for.
Oh, I don't know if they do. I feel like I would have rolled my eyes a little bit if they say that. Yeah, I hope they don't.
There's the escape prisoners. I think that's what they say.
Okay. All right. Good. That I'm okay with.
Okay. But yeah, back to we lift up. First of all, that lift is incredibly fast. It's just like, you're up. And as soon as you're going up, they're lowering the guns at you. And everyone in the car is like, oh, no. And then they start firing. As soon as they start firing, we turn to the side and we see, and this is a different kind of blaster effect, but we see giant blaster lasers fly by us and then tear holes in the walls behind us as we turn. And the way they did this, Pete, do you have a guess on how they did this?
No.
It's the Countdown to Extinction asteroid hits, the little meteors, just little ones.
Okay.
Because if you see that ride with the lights on, you'll see all these sticks everywhere pointing into the ground with little LED dots. And the to create the little meteors crashing, it's just an LED trail going whoop all the way across. So this has mixed in with the conduit above us is just long trails of LED dots. And when the blast goes by, it's like almost like a fading beam that fades to the front and fades to the back, just goes vroom, all the way across. And it's so fast that you don't really see the stick, and it blends into the piping they have on the ceiling there so perfectly. You don't even notice it, but it's a great effect.
This was probably my favorite little sequence in the ride itself, was the getting away from the AT-AT walker and chasing down that hallway and being shot over the head and the wall coming apart. Like, if I had to cut it down, like, this was probably my favorite little section.
I we all ducked. Like, instinctively, you ducked. You don't want to get your head blown off. Like, it feels, and the sound design, the sound travels across the hallway, too, at the same time mm-hmm. that the beam does. And it ends with an explosion on the wall with the, like, see-through Muppet. I'm going to say Muppet Vision, but people have no idea what I'm talking about. You know, like, the walls are fine at the beginning of Muppet Vision. At the end, like, they're see-through and you see holes in the wall. Yeah. Like that.
Me and you have only witnessed the bridge scene from the left-hand
which
side.
Which I believe to be the better side, because Kylo looks right at us.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I'm like, wait, if he's over here looking at me, I can see the other cart. Is he not looking at them?
He kind of turns towards them and us, but he ends on us, and it's more emotion. I love, though, it's such a great scene because Hux has no idea what's going on. He's like, he's a complete loser in the book.
Because he's Hux. Hux sucks.
He's sitting there and he's like, bring up the shields. And he's like, why? I see no reason. Then boom, everyone shows up. It's the whole cavalry is here to shoot at them. And then he's like, I heard the prisoners escaped. And like Kylo's like, well, that was foolish of them to have hope. And he turns around and looks me in the eye. Looks me right in the eye. It to my face. And as soon as he does, the droid, all of a sudden, who for some reason was like, hey, let's just watch, see what's going on. No, guys, I want to see what's going on. Then at that moment, the droid's like, maybe we should get out of here.
Yeah, they made the droid very Chopper in his personality. And I appreciate that, because Chopper's the best droid in all of Star Wars. I don't care about anyone else's opinion on that. Chopper's the best. And yeah, our little R5 unit, I believe it's an R5 unit on this one, very Chopper. And if you listen to this dialogue and figure it out, like, what is he actually saying? It's probably some dirty words. Whereas that is 100% what's happening with Chopper. So I thought that I really liked his character. I even had, there was someone in the front row who actually patted the droid on the top of the head.
I did the second I sat down.
And I was like, that's good. I'm like, this is really strong. You know, the people are having this much fun with it. But yeah, it's a great scene. I will say, what do you think about this? I know that there's a million, there's so much money going everywhere.
It's not the Wicked Witch.
Not everyone can move like the shaman, you know, like, because that's the money on that ride. That's the shaman. The Ren animatronic here, it feels just slightly stiff, only because I've now seen the Elsa animatronic and the shaman, and he seems just a touch stiff. But I can't, like, I think complaining about this is dumb, because the finances that they put into everything, they cannot build that level of animatronic for every time you see an animatronic, because you see a lot of animatronics in this ride.
I think the Hux almost looks more stiff to me, because at least he has like when he turns, and anything on a turntable always has that feeling to me. I think when Hondo and Naka turns left and right to his console and then turns to us in the like pre-show area and Smugglers, I have that same feeling, like, I know you're Ben Franklin turning around to me right now. I don't feel like you're walking.
Yeah, you don't. You're not taking weight off of one leg and shifting it to the other.
But
I
will say, this Kylo Ren tucks his arm into his like cape area or whatever he's got on in such a way that his arm looks very realistic. I think it's just the swivel base isn't that realistic.
Yeah, the arms are very active. He is every relative of mine. He is so Italian in his arm movement. Would have loved for it to have been non-helmeted, but I understand why, because that would have been even more money and this and that. So
I think Hux's face looked pretty good, because we, from this angle, you can see his face.
He's on a side angle. You can't see it that clear on, but he's got that Hux that, you know, that he's just always smelling something he doesn't like.
that rebel scum.
Yeah.
And then we turn around and we back into an elevator, and we see a long corridor or a fake endless corridor from Haunted Mansion style, and Kylo just jumps down into this corridor and starts walking toward us with purpose, and he's got his like lightsaber, and even knowing how they did this effect, the real lightsaber with the projection really sells it. Like, it really sells it. Like, he looks like he's walking toward us, and you hear the sound of him like clang, jumping down and hitting like the metal. I thought he was going to be running a little bit more toward us, but I kind of like that he's not running. He's just, he's like, he's like Jason Voorhees walking toward us.
Well, this is, I think that's very in character for Ren though. That, yeah. Very Voorhees-like, you know, he's horror, you know.
And as soon as he gets pretty close to you, that's when the elevator door is shut right in your face. And the lights make it look like you're going down, but it's a fake elevator. But that you have barely enough seconds to notice you're even in an elevator when he jumps on top of you and shoves the lights saber through the roof, which I think of Kylo Ren's lightsaber, I think of the SNL skit where it's like, what do you think of his lightsaber? It's like, oh, it looks all dangerous and like unruly. they did a pretty good effect by making it look like it's rough. Like, if it was any other lightsaber, they wouldn't have to worry about that, but it's his lightsaber. And I think to pull off this effect, well, first of all, what did you think of the effect? Do you think it was pretty viable?
If it wasn't Ren's saber, that's the thing. If it wasn't Ren's saber, I would have said, oh, that looks weird. But because Ren's saber is this crudely mated, you know, handmade thing, that the blade is always crackling with energy, and it's not a sharp, smooth lightsaber blade the way that we've seen in every other film, you know, even for Sith. Because he made it on his own, you know, with like no guidance almost.
Yeah. He had to go to Savvy's and put down some money.
So I thought it looked really good. I can see that it maybe be a little like tornado-y in its movements.
It is definitely, okay, I was going to say, it is definitely a spinning lightsaber blade. And it is on a piece of a section of roof that is rotating out. So it was revealing more and more of a cut. But it is done in a way, and it has like a projection on it that makes it look like, you know, there's like melting rubber or melting plastic happening around it. And it's done in such a way and so fast that you're like, oh my God.
It doesn't linger. So you don't really have time to look at it. Again, this is a weird thing that I think that all of us do, is we've become so critical of things because we can re-experience them so many times. It's like movies were not made for you to watch 20 times and then be like, no, I noticed this thing over here. This means that they weren't paying attention. It's like, that's not how that works. And it's the same thing in this. Like, you can watch the video for this attraction over and over again and then say, oh, well, that effect doesn't look good. But when you're in the moment,
well, and like, you're not thinking about things like that. The lights turn up in the elevator. Like, it's so cinematic. Yeah. But like, you've got no choice but to watch this thing happen, and your life is at risk. But also, if you do watch the videos over and over again, pay attention to the little things and admire them. Like, it's not just a stiff thing. It's almost like he's sawing through. You could see it kind of waver back and forth a little bit. And it's little touches like that that really feel like there's a person at the other end of this. It's not mechanical. This got happening.
Yeah, this got a really big reaction from the people on the interaction with me. This was one of, because it's right above your head. So this was one of the, like, oh my God, you know, I heard a lot of people have that reaction. And I was like, good. That's a good reaction.
Even the fact that we're in a ride vehicle that is rotating in place in an elevator, even though it's not a real elevator, still it's a tight room, and we're in this ride vehicle that when the effect starts happening, it's like the droid wants to see it too, so it turns us toward it. And just that little movement alone, it's like, it really heightens the moment, so we don't have to keep our heads turned.
Yeah,
it's like, so hey, look at this.
This was something that was such a big thing with Mark Davis. Like, Mark Davis, because he made a big mistake in the original Jungle Cruise that Walt Disney always harangued him about, is that he made stuff that to see it, you would have to turn around. And so directorially, Walt pointed that out, and he always said to him, like, don't do that Jungle Cruise thing again. And Mark Davis kept that hard. Now, this is a story that I was literally told. This is by Chris Merritt, who's an Imagineer. He was the guy who just authored with Pete Docter the 2-volume Mark Davis book. This is direct from him when I got to speak with him a couple of weeks ago, which if you want to check it out, it's on our show and all that. But he says, like, there's one of the hardest things to do is when you have an attraction where there's so much going on, you have to directorially be smart and put the audience in the right position to see the effect that you want them to see. And this ride, with as much as going on, it is in front of you. That cart, moving trackless, smooth, comfortable, gets you exactly where you need to be to take in the story that you need to be told at that moment, even though you can look around 180 degrees, you know, you can look left and right, and there's something to see, but that story is kept in front of you. So you never have to move or shift your body to understand what's going on and what you can look next, you know, what's possibly going to happen next.
It's,
you know,
great though that it's a droid too, so it has a personality. Like, he'll even start to turn one way and realize, nope, that's dangerous, and turn a different way.
Yeah,
so it's,
yeah,
almost like our like we're in control. That's how we would react in the situation. It's like, nope, not going that way, nope. it is so smooth. It feels, because in Star Wars universe, except for treads, there is no wheels, everything floats, and it feels like we're on some kind of floating conveyance system. Going through the scenes, it is so smooth, and you really take for granted how much turning left and right you're doing and spinning around, and my hair's whipping around. People are like, this is going to be like a slow moving great movie ride. It's like, no, it's not.
It's because clearly they've never done that ride on cocaine. That's the
thing. Like, we're not just going forward and looking and going, ooh, ah, like even Mystic Manor, no, which is a similar ride to this in a lot of different ways, doesn't really get crazy until one scene finally at the end, I think, right? Like this, it's crazy from the get-go. We're moving in directions just for, like, you wouldn't imagine for any other ride vehicle. And so it has to be trackless.
But would you also agree that it toes a line that, and I understand there are very varying degrees of what people consider for themselves to be motion sickness. It's like, it's nothing we can really measure. But I think that they've done a really good job in measuring that people don't have a motion sickness effect.
If you closed your eyes, maybe, but if you're paying attention and watching, it's not, it's done in just a way that it is riding the line on, but it's, I've heard there are people in our group in our theme park stop on Facebook, search for our group. They were asking, like, is it motion sickness? And everyone was saying, like, I get motion sickness on Star Tours, I get motion sickness on Spider-Man, but this didn't. Like, I didn't get motion sickness on it. And they said, like, there's one moment that almost got to me, either talking about the elevator up or talking about the drop later on, but it's like a split second and it's worth it for the whole ride just for that split second.
Yeah. That's where I would set it. Again, me personally, I don't get motion sickness. I'm very lucky in that sense.
Yeah.
But I feel very confident in my friend Josh, who went with us, very motion prone. Like, I'm amazed he can drive a car sometimes without dying. And he went through the ride and he had no problems. He came out and he was like, dude, I feel fine. Absolutely no problem. I was like, all right, great.
So we just exited the fake elevator and we go into the gunner room. And how big is this screen that is behind these windows?
I don't know. 30 feet high and, you know, probably 40 feet wide. Like, it's huge.
It's not one screen per window. It is a massive, almost like a half-size IMAX screen behind all the windows. Like, they're sharing one screen, so it's a continuous
image. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what they're doing.
But it's done in a way, for the first time in an attraction, they're doing, like, a HDR version, where, like, the blacks are blacker, so that it really feels like deep space. And it makes it harder to tell, like, it... I don't want to say, like, oh my God, those ships are really in the distance and this is real space. But at the same time, I don't see the curvature of a screen the way that I would, like, even on Forbidden Journey. Obviously, you can see the dome if you look up into the sides. If you're riding on Hogwarts Express, you're going to see the curve of their fake endless screen on the sides and the top. But this is done in such a way that it's so far out that the depth actually, like, there doesn't need to be squinching, I don't know what you call it. on Spider-Man, as you approach a screen, it, like, distorts the image to match your motion. This doesn't have to do that, which tells me that it is, like you said, like 20 to 40 feet back to make this effect work. And that is impressive. Everyone's looking at the guns going back and forth. And I'm like, guys, this screen is like IMAX out there. Are you seeing this? I feel like maybe the last window in the gunner room, you can almost kind of sense that the screen is closer there as it get like curves. Like, but by then they're trying to distract you and they have like a projected laser effect just cut a giant gaping hole in the wall. So it's like right about the time you're about to go, wait a minute, I can see the edge of that screen. Whoa, I'm being shot at.
Yeah, the one of the last scenes of this attraction mirrors a scene from Revenge of the Sith where General Grievous throws the spear at the window of the ship. So it breaks, the whole window shatters, and you know, people get sucked out into space.
So, okay, that is the next scene then, is the Kylo showdown, which like after, I love how we're kind of facing this wall and that we see all the damage happening. Cause okay, wait, let's skip back. The gunner scene is the first time on this attraction where we hear the hero theme of the music. It is the first time after all of that's happened where if you look out the windows, you'll notice the resistance is winning the battle and it's the tide is turning on our adventure. And we're no longer, maybe we're actually going to make it out of this and we're not, you know, in danger anymore. And that's when you hear the Star Wars theme just bust out. And I'm not even that big of a Star Wars fan. And I feel a little tear in my eye because there hasn't been the Star Wars theme in any of the things in Galaxy's Edge. And all of a sudden it's just hitting me with all the volume. And at the same moment you see like the big ships just crashing outside and then a laser beam comes in, but then you turn the corner and it's like an old Hitchcock gag where if you want to give someone bad news, have them enter the scene smiling. So we're so like on a high, then we turn around and then we're in danger. And it's like, boom, back
and
to
this,
scared
this
again.
This is a John Williams thing. If you watch Jaws, there is a scene where they start chasing down the shark. They got one barrel in them and Hooper's at the wheel and he's like, I'm turning around, get ready another barrel. And the hero theme hits and it's like, dun, 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 dun. And they go after him.
Yeah.
And then the shark goes down into the water with two barrels on him. And it just dies. And the music is like.
Yeah. Boo, 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 boo. Like the music just starts going, oh, like it gives
and that's
up.
This, you know, that's this moment.
We turn around and you hear a gasp from the audience again. We turn around and Kylo is just standing there and everyone goes, oh, no. We thought we were getting away. It's like it's a perfect scene because we were just chased. He jumped on the elevator. He stabbed his thing down. And then like we got distracted by all the war happening. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, that's right. We're about to be murdered. I forgot. And he does this great thing where I mean, he says something to us. I can't remember. Probably like, you will tell me where the resistance base is. Something like that.
He says, your souls are mine.
Yes. It's exactly the same as Darth Vader in the intro to one of the Star Tours randoms, where he like starts controlling, using the force to move the Star Tours. But he does it two-handedly because there's two cars riding in this ride together and he moves both of us with his arms and everyone's like, whoa. Because he's awesome. Controlling us. This is where looking out the windows, like there's screens out there, just like there's a war happening outside. Any other ride, that would be the focus, but it's just in the background. But if you look, there's like something really big comes, like a blast comes at the ship, and everything is timed so perfectly. Kylo moves like he's being, he's feeling the brunt of it. Our vehicles jolt. The wall behind him completely explodes out in a blast of air, like Figment happens behind us because all the air in the room is being sucked out through this hole in the wall. And you could see Kylo actually move backward, like he's being sucked out the wall
like
too.
He's about to get pulled out.
And then the roof collapses onto him, or at least covers his view. I noticed, though, it's exactly the same flipping out wall that they use in Mystic Manor. Like, they have a projection map scene where you're circling around, and then the wall, like, kind of flies away.
Oh, okay.
And it's flaps that, and it's exactly the same shape as the cutaway flaps in Mystic Manor. So it's a great use of a technology they already came up with. Just like they already came up with, you know, the trackless motion vehicles and like the projection mapping, like everything's being used in this attraction. It's like an opus. It's a perfect marriage of literally everything Imagineering has ever come up with. There's fiber optics for sparks going off. There's projection mapping. There's new screen technology. So that's a great moment. It's like the perfect climax to the story.
It's also a good realistic, not realistic, but like it's a good sensical way of us getting away from this villain. You know, because really nothing else really makes sense. Like, we should just get, you know, slaughtered by this dude.
Yeah, he's only kept us alive because he wants information out of us, which, again, I can't remember the name of the planet. I'm sorry. I just can't remember. So we turn around and then we go down a hallway and we get into an escape pod. And this is the one thing, I think it's like the worst kept secret about this attraction. And it even, like, they had to put it in the ride warnings that there's a sudden drop. So... And this is another one of those things that we revealed in our podcast in January. And to their credit, Attractions Magazine actually put out an article the same day that our podcast came out. And they talked about it too. But they actually talked about the Kylo Ren scene and the explosion out the behind him. So good on them for that. But yeah, any other ride, this would be the whole ride. There's a whole simulator sequence.
Yeah, there's a simulator sequence that just kind of happens upon you. But what I like is that we don't spend 30 seconds like doing that stuff. You know what I mean? We have this drop, but it isn't a Tower of Terror type drop or anything like that.
No.
And then what would you say that lasts? 10 to 15 seconds at the most?
The whole sequence is maybe 20 something seconds, including the locking in and locking out. Because you do hear it. If you ride it more than once, you'll start to notice it go click clock as you get in, click clock as you get out. The drop is like a few seconds. But I love that on screen, you see other escape pods dropped before yours. So the suspense is building like, oh, when are we going to drop? When are we going to drop? I'd liken it more to the Flight of Passage, which is what we talked about, because I think it's the same type of ride system. Flight of Passage goes up and down, and it's a smooth up and down. And I think it's very much like that. It smoothly drops you, and it smoothly decelerates you. So unlike Hagrid, where you're just, it's a hard drop, like boom. This is more like, whoa.
Yeah, it feels natural. While not being, you know, the elevator to hell scene in Alien. You know, like that's the other that's the other side of this coin is harsh. Yeah, you know,
it's a good moment too because it really feels like gravity is catching us, like the non gravity is catching us, and then the thrusters of the escape pod kick on. So it's like fall, catch zero gravity, and then thrust forward. And you really, and a lot of people weren't expecting it. There is full on simulator. It goes like, you know, pitch and yaw. But it's mostly just crash landing to the planet. It's very fast. It's break through the atmosphere and then crash. It's very good. It's very well done. It's probably the same kind of dome as the Smuggler's Run. I will say it is funny, though, if you think about it, this is now the third attraction that we land in a spaceship on Batuu.
Yeah, well, all roads lead to Rome, even if one of those roads lead to Rome that is not actually Rome.
Because Smuggler's Run. Smuggler's Run, where Chewie pilots us back into the completely legitimate business of Hondo and Aka Solutions. On Star Tours, if you get the new trilogy up until they change it, it ends by landing Star Tours on Batuu. And he says, I have a feeling our adventure is just beginning. And now this. So that's three space rides that land in Batuu. Yeah. Even one of the rides isn't even set in Batuu and lands in Batuu.
Yeah, gotta get us home. I mean, sometimes you gotta walk through the Muppets to get back home, but you know.
Maybe the Muppets move to Batuu. You know.
Or walk through Fantasyland if you're in the other coast. True, either way.
Right. That's a much longer walk too.
Yeah, but you got a castle in the middle. Yeah, so I think that it's funny a lot. Like, the whole ride is building to this moment, but it really was the Kylo Ren scene before it that is the pinnacle of the attraction. And this is almost like it's a formality now. We have to get you back to the planet.
Yeah, that whole final sequence with the gunships too, like just going past those huge laser cannons. It's just, again, the scale is just smashing you in the face. And then you crash, and you think again, like, okay, now we're done. But you're kind of not done.
Another wow moment, because, of course, when you do the drop, everyone's like, whoa. And then you fly forward and you're like, whoa. And then you get, you pull out and you're outside again.
Yeah, you're outside. And it just, it subverts your expectations in a lot of really fun ways. It won't be fun in the summer. Those parts are going to be like, oh.
Yeah, it helped that we went on a cold day. Yeah,
like this really weather is the best weather to open this attraction in, because if it was in the summer, I'd be like, yo, we don't need to go outside. It's just like everything's got to be in a dome.
But it's so crazy. You would never imagine a trackless ride vehicle out in the elements.
Yeah.
And I understand it's covered, but still, it's like that's crazy to me. Like, and then we see Commander Beck, and he had gotten one of the escape pods too. And it's like, yay.
I got stupid happy to see that character again. I guess because I was like, you know, the guy who's voicing it and stuff. But it was, that was another thing. Like, I didn't expect to see another high quality animatronic saying like goodbye to me, pretty much, you know, as you're done, like you're loading out. But he gets to have the final, like, you know, we're okay. You know, the Mon Calamari.
And we're officially in the Resistance.
Yeah.
Now.
It just,
we can ride with your family anytime. And I think Universal should take note that on Skull Island, you know, having Kate show up at the end would have been wise, so we know she wasn't eaten by a crab monster.
No, I'm all right with that. Oops. Yeah. Hashtag not Amy Adams almost getting killed on King Kong was fine with me.
There are some drivers that have Kate come in through the radio. It's like, Kate, you're alive, but not all of them.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah, on some of them, she makes it through.
There's been a lot of references in this episode. We've hoped you've enjoyed this pop culture reference episode.
Useless knowledge at my fingertips. All of it.
It really is a culmination of all types of technology, but also like, yeah, subverting expectations. I went in expecting it to be like my fourth favorite ride, and I'm afraid to admit that it might be my favorite ride literally ever. Like, I feel ashamed that that might be true, because it's I feel like it's too soon. Like, there shouldn't be this many like good rides in a row.
They are on a really great streak. And I still think that Flight of Passage is something that I have. And I'm probably I am the biggest Star Wars fan I know. And this hits all my marks for like something that I wish that they would have built. And I really enjoy it. But there's an emotional thing that happens on Flight of Passage that I don't get at any other attraction. But this attraction, I can't believe it exists.
Like, that's I was about to say, are you me? because like, no one else, like, I have Flight of Passage as my number one ride.
That's a lot of people I know. The Flight of Passage is the absolute, you know, it's the pinnacle, it's the mountain. And other things may have, you know, more variation in the attraction or whatever. But my thing with Flight of Passage is it's an attraction that I don't think ever would have been created if it wasn't for people like Joe Rohde being involved, because in most of those rides, I'll put it bluntly, if Universal was to make a ride like that,
something goes wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the something goes wrong bit. It's, you know, there's someone with a flamethrower. Eventually, there'll be someone shooting, you know, shooting heat.
Toretto, give up the witness or you'll all get fried.
Like, they can never, ever do something that's just like, take in this experience. And that's why Flight of Passage to me is so unique. And it's in both its attractions where it's like, just sit down and take in the environment. And
That reminds me, and I'm sorry off, but I went on Navi River Journey yesterday and the current was going too slow. And I finally got a 10-minute ride out of it. It finally is long enough.
And that attraction, I know that they wanted it to be much longer and they basically ran out of time and all that. I think it's great. Like, for what it does, I think it achieves that goal. It looks beautiful. It's sometimes less is more. And
Flight of Passage too. It's like, these are the happy rides. These are like, I go there for the euphoric experience and the release. It's like, okay, let's throw some more pop culture references in here. Never Ending Story, Riding on Falcor, the Golden Eagle from Rescuers Down Under. All those moments where you want to feel like you're flying and you're riding atop something and the character closes their eyes and puts their arms out. That is Flight of Passage. You can really experience flight.
The cave scene where you stop. You just land. Yeah. And you stop to take this all in. And so I would love to see something like that in Star Wars, because there's something very alluring about a slowed down, smell the roses-ish, you know, type of attraction with the Star Wars brand on it, because I just don't think anyone's ever really done that before.
To your point before, too, I would welcome a lot more of the, like, slower rides. Like, I've always argued for Lost Continent, and they should put something in there. It's a little more chill. I think a Star Wars version of that would be awesome. I love the river version. I love the river ride.
Under current scrutiny of the way people sometimes react to these, you know, new attractions and this and that, they would have said Fantasyland is a complete disaster. Not enough happens on these rides.
Haunted Mansion is too boring. Yeah, like, it needs a plot.
Yeah, and like none of that matters. You know, you don't need 7 layers of backstory for every character that you see in a film, for everything that ever happens in an attraction. That's not a lost art, but the public doesn't want that as much. You know, we'll see how it goes forward, but you know, Disney right now is nailing it.
I think for me, it comes down to the pre-shows, and I'd rather the longer pre-show experiences of this than sitting and watching that guy try to explain to me how RDA's bad mining practices have caused keystone species to fail, which is causing a ripple effect throughout the ecosystem of the Moora Valley. And it's like, oh my God, stop talking. Just stop. Yeah, it's
true for that.
So right now, everyone listening who for some reason wanted all these spoilers but hasn't been on the ride yet, what would you say when they're like, hey, is it worth getting up and going at 4 a.m. next week?
Yeah, why not? Here's why I say, yeah, why not? As long as it doesn't interfere with your normal life and you're okay with doing that, right now you are spending your personal time. We have been doing this for about 2 hours. You are right now spending your personal time invested in listening to me, a moron, and some other people talking about this attraction. If you felt that you have not wasted the last 2 hours of your time and you got something out of this, then go and spend a couple of hours getting to the park early. Do something stupid, because doing something stupid is where you find the most fun in life sometimes. So go. It's a completely dumb thing to do. There's no reason logically to do the thing that I do to go enjoy an attraction. There's zero reason to do it. But if you just spent 2 hours or even an hour and a half once this is edited and gets rid of all my dumb rambling, if you did that and you felt that this was a good investment.
1 hour 40.
And you felt this is a good investment of your time, go. Have fun, because why not? There's no downside to it. You'll have fun with it. I think you're going to be surprised with how big this ride is and how immersive it is. And just go in wanting to see some cool stuff. You know, it's not the birthing of a new nation. Like, this isn't going to crack the universe. But this is such a cool experience. You know, room to room, as me and Alicia were talking before, room to room, I looked around and I said, what is this? Did they do this? Like, they put all this together, this thing that like has lived in my head. They built all this. And I think it's worth your time investment. If you care enough about this kind of stuff, absolutely. Go there at 4 a.m. Be foolish.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast at all, you should probably be somebody that's be interested in going to see the ride.
Yeah, I think it's worth your time. I 100% think it's worth your time. I think you're going to have a good time with it. Because, I mean, I did it twice, and I'm going on Wednesday.
Yeah, I might be going Tuesday or Thursday, depending on
I haven't done it once, and you guys just made me more excited for it. So,
well, you watched the video, though. So, Ian, what are your thoughts?
I can't wait to get on the dang thing, and I want to feel on a ride like this, I don't mind watching the videos because I know it's not going to feel the same once I get on it, because the rooms are going to be so much more vast and things are going to be much better without just like one single view. I'm stoked on this ride and it looks super fun, but I can't wait to see the effects with my own eyes and sort of up close instead of, like I said, through a screen. So I can't wait to get on this ride.
Yeah, there's some scenes where there's so much going on peripherally that rerides, I'm going to be noticing more and more special effects that I didn't catch the first two times.
Yeah, there's the first time I went on it, after I got off, I felt that I was like, what happened?
Like, that's what my friend said as soon as we got off. What just happened?
it's so much to take in on this attraction. I genuinely think that people are going to be wowed, even cynical people who go in. Well, they'll probably still be cynical, but I think that they've really hit it out of the park. And
I can be cynical. You want me to be cynical? That second Kylo Ren, if you look at his feet, you can see the track where his foot is on a stick and he swivels and you can see the cutout in the floor. But I'm not going to be picky.
Yeah, same. I love Hagrid's. I think Hagrid's is really impressive. Yeah, but
that Scroot's on a stick. I can see where the feet connect on that unicorn. Yeah, we can do this Scroot. All day.
That Scroot, like... I'm like, God, just throw a rug. Like, just do anything. You know. but now we have this. We're going to have Mickey and Minnie coming up. We got Tron coming up. And not everything has to be bigger than the last thing released, I think is, you know, something good to kind of keep in mind. It doesn't always have to be an ever, inclining hill. There can be some times where it's just kind of fun.
Okay. let us know what you thought of Rise of the Resistance. If you're one of the several hundred people that have ridden it since it opened, because those boarding passes are hard to get. Thank you again for Pete. Thank you for being here. Where can everyone find you?
Well, basically, our show is called Disney Magic Hour. We review Disney films from Snow White up to the current, and we'll go through the production of the films, go through the plot, and then we ask three questions. Does it hold up? What's the moral, and does it achieve its goal of telling that moral? And what's the iconic shot? So that's what we do. And then we talk about new releases and stuff like that. So Disney Magic Hour, we're on iTunes, Google Plus, Spotify, other things. But if you go to Last Gen Podcast, that's our website, LASTGEN Podcast. And we are on the social nightmare that's known as Facebook. If you search Disney Magic Hour, we do have an active, very active group in there. Yeah, I hope you guys come on by, check it out. It's good stuff. We'll be reviewing Black Cauldron this week, which it was the first time I ever watched it, and wow. That's a movie. It's got scenes, actors, everything.
We've had Adam on our Disney Plus episodes recently. Yes, he's a part of your podcast as well.
He is.
And if you haven't heard it yet, check out Park Stop Plus, our Disney Plus discussion podcast. We've done a couple episodes so far talking about Disney Plus shows and some of the movies we caught. It's also on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and OrlandoParkStop.com. And do be sure to support us at Patreon.com/ThemeParkStop for extra podcasts, theme park rumors, probably a huge deleted chunk from this podcast in particular, where we go on side rambles and rants. I think they were incredibly interesting, and we probably threw up a 15-minute cutout segment there.
Hopefully Pete will come back for the last Park Stop Plus thing, because it'd be fun to talk The Mandalorian with him.
Yeah, I would love to talk Mandalorian. I think it's been a fun ride.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. And thank you for joining the cause.
This is the way.
We will mix all our Star Wars references together. I have spoken.
Oh, boy.
What? No.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.